Welcome back to Agile4L's Humanizing Work Show. I'm Richard Lawrence.
And I'm Peter Green.
This week we are addressing a topic that we get a lot of questions about in our training and coaching and online, which is motivation. How it works, how we can become more motivated, how our teams can become more motivated.
So what's my motivation here, Richard?
It's not coffee. I think you are intrinsically motivated this morning.
That is correct.
So tell us more about how motivation works and we'll figure out what to do with it.
Yeah, when we talk to clients, when we talk to people that are asking about this, we often talk a lot about the research and summaries of the research to make it a little more digestible. So I'm going to give a brief history lesson of the science of motivation. So the first real seminal research in the science of motivation was done by Douglas McGregor at the MIT Sloan School. McGregor wrote a book called The Human Enterprise, where he posited a theory that he called Theory X and Y. Theory X of motivation is that in order to motivate people at work, they kind of need carrots and sticks. They need extrinsic motivators. They need incentives and disincentives in order to be really engaged at work to do good work. Theory Y of motivation is that motivation at work is as natural as eat, sleep, play for human beings, and the job of management is just to remove the barriers to that intrinsic motivation. So that was some of the early research on it. It influenced some CEOs of the time, CEOs that ended up running American Express and Avis Rental Car and companies like that. It was a big kind of seminal thought that what if we just removed barriers and people would do good work? Fairly new, if you think about most management up to that time, was kind of industrial revolution management. Like, how do we get more, squeeze as much out of these people as possible? Starting to shift into more knowledge work, more creative work. Theory Y was a big idea at the time. If we fast forward to the 80s, now we have some more research. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so we ended up with a theory called self-determination theory in the 80s that I think built on that Theory Y and looked at just what is it that motivates people.
And I think McGregor was more positing a hypothesis based on his own intuition and experience. I don't think he was doing validation and those types of things. He was saying, this seems to be true to me. It was very aligned with his personal philosophy. And so he wrote the book.
Right. And when I looked at the research from the 80s, one of the things I struggled with was every study seemed to have its own model. Like, just focus on these three things. And then somebody else would say, well, just focus on these three other things. Yeah. And it's hard to tease out whether they're additive, like you need to focus on 40 things as a leader if you want to build a motivated team,
right.
Or if there's some combination that makes sense.
Right. Yeah, and I think we get to this idea that for human beings, there are, in most cases, a few core motivators that matter. Those other things are maybe second-order effects of those core things.
Or particular aspects of them.
Yes,
You're focusing on different things based on your experiment design or what you're interested in.
Right. So self-determination theory from the 80s was still pretty scientifically written. If you actually read the papers, you kind of need to, you know, have a good vocabulary and interpret what they mean and application and those kind of things. So Dan Pink, an author who's good at doing that kind of thing, of summarizing bodies of research and making it really digestible, came along and wrote a book called Drive, and then later did a TED Talk that was later animated by RS Animate and became very popular. He summarized the research of self-determination theory as three key factors, right? And this is autonomy, the desire to be self-driven, to have some control over things, mastery, our desire to get better at things.
And to feel competent.
Yes, And purpose, the desire to make a difference in the world, right? I know that you like to talk about purpose a little bit differently.
Yes, I struggled a little bit when I heard his presentation and saw purpose there because I'd seen a disconnect between purpose and motivation. I remember seeing a client in the shadow of a purpose poster that was like, we are changing the world of healthcare, and sitting up there on the wall, and this developer, I don't remember why we were talking about motivation or purpose at the time, but you know, he looks at the poster cynically, and it's like, yep, this new checkbox I'm adding to the login is transforming the world of healthcare. Yeah. And it was like having the purpose sitting there was actually demotivating for him.
Yeah.
Right. And then we get to a sprint review, and one of the stakeholders, or one of the customer representatives, a nurse who would actually use the system, looks at it and says, thanks for building that remember me checkbox, because now I can stay logged in through a whole patient visit.
Nice.
And actually interact with the patient more effectively. And suddenly he was motivated.
And so it's not the poster on the wall, Richard, that motivates people?
Surprise, surprise. I know. There's a whole industry that falls apart there.
That's right.
Yeah. So what I realized there is that it's not the scale of the purpose.
Yeah.
It's your connection to the purpose. And when I went back to some of the original sources, I found they didn't use the word purpose. That was Pink's kind of popularization of it.
Yes.
It's relatedness was the term they used. It's or connection.
And is it connection to others? Is it connection to the idea or the outcome? Or is it a little both?
It seems to depend on the study. It's one of those things.
Yeah.
So when we talked in a previous episode about the humanizing work themes and we talk about impact, like doing something that matters to other people, having a positive impact on other people, I think we're talking about this relatedness thing.
Yeah.
It's hard for me to imagine a motivating purpose that doesn't somehow impact another person. I think we're wired to care about other people.
I'm trying to think of an example and I can't.
Yeah, yeah. Like, challenge accepted.
Yeah, right.
I will think of just such a purpose. But when I think about what's really motivating across our clients, what's motivating to us, if it's about purpose, there's somebody else involved. We can have motivation that's more centered around mastery and our own growth.
Right.
That's not about somebody else. But even then, like as you're getting good at an instrument or something, you want to show other people.
That's right. Yeah.
You want to have an impact on somebody else. So I don't think we can disconnect that from other people.
So I want to talk about two other books or bodies of research that I often refer to. One is a book called The Progress Principle. And this is a book by Teresa Amabile. I actually discovered this book through a Dan Pink tweet. He tweeted something like, this is the best business book I've read in the last decade. And so my ears perked up, my mental ears perked up, and I went and read the book. I don't know. It seems like this is something you'd be interested in.
Maybe because you've explained it to me so many times.
In the Progress Principle, Amabile is a researcher on creativity, and she was doing a pretty long-running study, pretty broad-ranging study, where she got several companies to volunteer to be part of this study. And it was several months of research, and what she did is she got one project team at each of these companies that were in a diverse set of industries, diverse set of contexts. And what they did is they agreed to do, everybody on the project team answered two emails, one in the morning, one in the afternoon, at the end of the day. And the morning email essentially said, what's your level of motivation coming into work today? The evening email had two questions. Same question, what's your level of motivation as you leave work today? And then the second question, which they called the journal question, which is, what's something that happened today with no other constraint around it?
That's a good way to put it. I was wondering if they would ask, what did you get done today, which would...
Yeah, that would bias it, right?
Bias,
But this was kind of grounded research. They didn't have a theory going in as to what would cause motivation to go up or down.
What happened?
Yeah, and so tell us something that happened. And so it was really interesting research because they had a tremendous amount of data over a long-running period of time. And as they started to look for correlations between things that happened on that team and what led to motivation being high, as high as it was when you came in or higher, they looked at all kinds of things that you might expect. They looked at some of the self-determination theory things. They looked at some of the common things that leaders think that they need to do, like acknowledge and appreciate and call out and those kind of things. What they found is that by far the highest correlation was between higher motivation and something that happened that day was, I got something done that mattered to somebody.
Yeah, and that was, as you were describing this, my thought was connecting the two theories. It's probably not so much about getting things done as closing the loop on experiencing autonomy, mastery, and purpose.
Yes, like this was the container of all three of those those factors.
When you're doing some long-running project over several months, you may not be getting the feedback that says your work matters and you're doing it well and you're growing and you had control over it.
Right.
You lose the other motivators. So it's like the small slices.
Right.
The progress is a means towards experiencing the other motivators.
Yeah. So I really like that. I like simple rules. Right, and so if we look for one thing, what a leader can look to, what an individual can look to, is what I do when I get up in the morning is one of the very first things I do is I think to myself, I have a quick session with myself where I say, if I only got one thing today done that would matter to somebody, what might that be? And I'll kind of go through a list of things. I'll say that often The first thing I think about is individuals. I actually don't think about projects. I don't think about goals. I don't think about strategy. I think about individuals.
Who am I going to impact today?
Yeah. Who could I help today? Mm-hmm. A lot of times it's related to family. It might be related to coworkers. It might be related to clients. But that has been very helpful for me as a daily practice to say, who am I going to help today?
Right. I mean, the fundamental habit that you and I teach the Agile teams we work with is small slices that matter.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And the way we talk about the daily scrum mm-hmm. is how are we going to collaborate to get something done today that matters?
Right. So I find that an interesting book, an interesting addition to the research. Mm-hmm. And then the only other one that I'll mention here is Neil Doshi and Lindsay McGregor's book called Primed to Perform, mm-hmm. because they do a really good job of not only talking about those positive factors, they describe the same things that Dan Pink describes, Dan Pink with autonomy, mastery, and purpose. The way they describe those, they use an alliteration. They call it play, purpose, and potential. And so play being related to autonomy, I want to feel like I'm going
and
in and
mastery,
playing a little bit. Yeah, and potential really is their direct link to mastery, mm-hmm. but they're related. So they call it play, purpose, and potential. But they also point out the things that really will kill motivation at work, which is emotional pressure, kind of like, you better, right? Economic pressure, associating financial benefits to any kind of work. And then the third one is inertia. Inertia being the idea that nothing ever changes around here. And that being the strongest one. So they do a little bit about correlating.
Yeah, I like what they do about strength.
Yes.
One of my key insights from that book is the way play showed up as three times more motivating than purpose.
Yes.
And I think about those teams where the people doing the work, you know, the developers in Scrum terms, don't seem to be aligned with what the business stakeholders care about. Mm-hmm. And when you look closely at it, usually it's they're following what's interesting to them.
Right.
And play is like doing the work is enjoyable. Mm-hmm. And so it's like if we're not going to get a compelling purpose, which is usually what's going on there,
right.
we're going to find something that's sufficiently motivating for us.
Yeah, exactly right.
So I tell product owners, you need to get purpose really right because it needs to overshadow play uh-huh. or it needs to get play to serve it.
Right. Really what we're trying to do is align the two.
Right.
Can we find something that is meaningful for the company, meaningful for the business, meaningful for customers, as well as meaningful for me personally. And Google's done some research around their best teams, and they're publishing a lot of this really interesting information on a site called Rework.
Citing sources.
Yeah, well, essentially, it's internal research.
Yeah, they're like rediscovering the same things.
Yeah, and rediscovering the same things. And when they talk about their best teams, two of the factors there that I think they do a good job of separating out is meaning of the work and impact of the work.
Are how do they distinguish factors. Between those?
And meaning of the work is it's work that I enjoy. It would be related to play.
Okay.
It's fun. It's, you know, I am interested in this type of work is how they describe meaning
That's
of the work.
That's not how we've been using the word meaning.
It's not. But it was their, but okay. their way to tee these two concepts out is it's meaningful to me personally. I like this type of work. And then impact of the work, meaning it impacts somebody else. So think of meaning as intrinsic, internal. And the impact is how does it benefit somebody else? So that's how they tease it out, right? That's two of those factors, right? So that's a lot of kind of information to draw on, Richard. What kind of advice do you give when people say, "Ah, oh, my team just doesn't seem motivated. Where should I start?"
Yeah. So if we want to simplify it, mm-hmm. I think Pink's three things are a good enough summary.
Yeah.
And memorable, so uh-huh. autonomy, mastery, purpose.
Right, and there's a really cool video that people can watch that only lasts 8 minutes and they can kind of digest the key concepts of it. He does a good job also of citing some of the research studies mm-hmm. that support these things, and so if you're working with leaders who might be skeptical and feel like this motivation stuff is woo-woo and yeah, who cares, right, show me the money.
Yeah, Drive is a great book at citing the sources.
Yeah.
And he does talk about how things like money play in.
Yes.
Uh-huh. So he's not ignoring the things that show up later in Prime to Perform. But he does give us this simple three-item thing to focus on, which is where I usually point leaders.
Right.
So it's give your people the right amount of autonomy.
Yeah.
Now, autonomy is kind of nuanced.
Uh-huh, yeah.
There are a couple things that are really striking to me about autonomy, and I actually haven't seen these much in the research, but they seem to show up over and over again in my anecdotal experience. Mm-hmm. So take that for what it's worth.
Right.
The two things that stick out to me is, one, when I ask people what motivates them, if they don't already know Pink's work, or you know the predecessors to it, nobody says autonomy. They talk about a lot of things that could roll up into mastery and purpose.
Uh-huh.
And then I'll ask a group, what demotivates you?
Uh-huh.
And far and away, the first thing people say is micromanagement.
Micromanagement, right? Yeah. The opposite of autonomy.
Right. Yeah. Which tells me that autonomy is something we just assume we have as humans, right? And it's like table stakes for motivation. Mm-hmm. But when it's taken away, we notice.
Yeah.
And the flip side of that is many people have had this experience. I've had this experience of getting more autonomy without direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not motivating.
Right.
Like floundering. Yeah. I don't know what I should be doing.
Yeah, there's a leadership type that's very passive, mm-hmm. right? Or a characteristic that's very passive, and they think they're being great leaders because right. I don't care what you do.
Everything.
Exactly. Let me just delegate everything to you and you figure it out. And that's highly demotivating to people.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Right. So autonomy is kind of table stakes for motivation. It's the first thing that sticks out. The second thing, which I really haven't seen in the research anywhere, but if somebody has seen this comment, I would love to be pointed to something about it, which is that it seems that you can delegate autonomy to other people and still be motivated.
Assuming that you trust that they'll use the autonomy well, right?
Right. Yeah. So I think about my mountain bike coach, who I trust to help me become a better, safer, faster mountain biker.
Right.
Right. And when I do a coaching session with Lee, he tells me what to do.
Yeah.
Right?
And you're not like, don't tell me what to do. I have autonomy.
I'm not into biking anymore because Lee told me to take 10 laps on the slalom track. I'm more motivated to do that thing than I was before because I believe he cares about my goals and he's qualified to get me there.
Yeah. It seems like he's locked into the other two factors. He's locked into your growth and he's locked into the purpose that you're trying to achieve. And if you trust that he's locked into those two things and in service of those, then you're willing to delegate some autonomy there.
And you can see that really clearly when he's coaching me and my wife, Dawn, on biking, because Dawn and I are motivated by very different things or motivation shows up differently for us, right? And we're often working towards different improvement goals.
Yeah.
And in the same session, he's interacting with each of us differently around mastery and purpose. Mm-hmm. And we're both willing to delegate that autonomy as a result of it.
And part of his skill as a coach is recognizing the difference in what motivates you and really tapping into that. And so that's a skill that leaders can develop, is to recognize in this context, this person, what's going to be helpful here, and for this person it might be very different. So it's not just give everybody the same level of autonomy, the same opportunity for growth, and the same statement about what the purpose of the work is.
Yeah.
It really is a personal thing. It is something that they must humanize in their work, if you will.
And this is a good point to give my regular plug for leaders should be getting coached somewhere, not necessarily on leadership. I definitely value leadership coaching. We do it. But I think being a beginner and growing in something and seeing what it feels like to be coached makes you better at dealing with other people and coaching them. And so, you know, I get coached in mountain biking, singing, Muay Thai.
Right.
And I'm more a beginner in some of those than others. And it's a great experience for me as a leader and coach.
Right.
Because I know what it's like to be on the other side of it. And I'm more aware of how different things feel, including motivation.
Yeah. Well, hopefully this has been helpful to you. Hopefully you got a few tips and tricks, a few ideas that help you do something today. Remember that idea of daily progress. And so this is, again, like most of the things we teach, not something where you need to go out and completely change how you're working, how you're leading, how you're showing up at work. You can pick any of the things that we've talked about today and say, you know what, tomorrow I'm going to try that a little bit at work and see how that changes things. Think of it as an experiment in how I can be more motivated and how I can help other people feel more motivated at work.
All right. How can I ramp up autonomy, mastery, or purpose a little bit today?
Good. So if you've found things that are helpful to you, we'd love to hear about it in the comments. So please do comment. Please do get in touch if you have some ideas that would be helpful here. And we hope to hear from you soon in this episode, or subscribe so you can check out all these episodes of the Humanizing Work Show.
See you next time.